All right, as the middle of the week rolls along, we have to get our dose of cannabis science so we can feed our head and get educated to get it regulated. And we do that every Wednesday with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the Stash.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we talk a lot about this notion of cannabis dependence. You know, we have all these different drug czars and ads that come out and talk about marijuana addiction and so on. And while there is such a thing as cannabis dependence, what I find interesting is how researchers take a look at that with respect to co-drug use, specifically alcohol or tobacco. You know, there's a lot of people that smoke cannabis and drink alcohol and or use cigarettes. So I'm kind of curious if there's any sort of studies or science that show how that would affect this idea of marijuana dependence.
A couple of interesting things have come out in the last few years on this idea, and it always raises a question for me, is cannabis getting blamed for dependence symptoms that may really arise from some other drug? So there's a new paper by Bruce Johnson and Eloise Dunlap, who are some acquaintances of mine down in New York City, and they show that folks who smoke tobacco regularly seem to be more likely to show cannabis-dependent symptoms if they also use marijuana. And they walk through an interesting pharmacological explanation for this, but I can't help but scratch my head about this because I think, gee, what is it about a certain person who smokes a lot of tobacco and a lot of pot who might in some ways experience some withdrawal symptoms from tobacco and say, oh, it must be the pot? In 2007, Sarah Smucker-Barnwell, one of my students, published a paper showing that folks who drink a lot of alcohol seem to be more likely to develop cannabis-dependent symptoms as their cannabis use increases. And again, I had a pharmacological explanation. We do see alcohol sort of slow the metabolism of THC in the lab. But then I can't help but wonder, are people, in a sense, experiencing withdrawal from one drug and cannabis is somehow bearing the brunt of it or getting the blame?
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking when you were mentioning that, is how do we separate out the different symptoms? I mean, is the symptomology of tobacco dependence similar to the symptomology of cannabis dependence?
Well, and the funny thing is, you know, with tobacco, gee, what happens when you don't have it? You're mildly irritable and you're craving tobacco. What happens with cannabis and you don't have it? Well, you're mildly irritable and you're craving cannabis. And I think the only real way to find out would be to quit one drug and to keep the other one going. Unfortunately, you know, we don't have good systematic studies of that to really be able to separate this kind of thing out. I know a lot of my friends tend to do this all-or-nothing thing where they're like, okay, that's it, I'm giving up everything.
Yeah.
And then you see them, you know, experience withdrawal and blame it on one drug when, in fact, it could very well be another. I feel like the other thing that gets neglected a lot of times with this is caffeine, and I will be the first to confess that I, you know, need some kind of 12-step intervention when it comes to caffeine. I'm clearly addicted, and man, if I don't have it, the headache and the severity of the withdrawal is markedly worse than a whole lot of the things that I've seen reported on cannabis, and I wonder, too, if some of that is in need of being taken into account, particularly in some of these inpatient studies where people may not be able to have access to as much caffeine as they want.
Mm. Now, how does this reflect then on the government claims about cannabis dependence? You know, I've seen a figure, something about 9%, they say, that would have some form of cannabis dependence. When they do these studies, are they taking into account the use of other drugs?
And in fact, that's relatively rare. So with dependence in particular, yeah, I see these 9 to 12% ranges, usually with people who use earlier in life and heavier use and, you know, regular daily use being at more risk for these dependent symptoms. But, again, we don't get a lot of the potential confounds. And back in the day when people were still talking about amotivation, they had a whole lot of, oh, marijuana and amotivation stuff come out. And then as soon as you took the alcohol consumption out of the equation, suddenly the marijuana impact on amotivation was disappearing. With the study that we did, we found that, in fact, you know, if you consider alcohol as part of the equation, it's clearly contributing to this, even though people are saying it's cannabis-dependent symptoms. We don't know. Alcohol withdrawal is markedly worse than anything that's been documented for cannabis, and I do feel like, again, you know, that's another drug they don't have access to in these inpatient populations. And so, of course, they may be saying it's one drug when really it could have been that. And so, obviously, this 9% to 12% estimate may be an overestimate. I'm also discovering, particularly with younger users, some of the interpretation of these symptoms, not so much for dependence but for abuse, are really perhaps a product of the drug war itself. So we've talked about this before, but one of the symptoms of marijuana abuse is legal problems. Well, gee, if we had a taxed and regulated market on cannabis, would you really be having the same kind of legal problems with cannabis possession? Probably not. And then does that, in a sense, make marijuana abuse disappear? Well, it sort of shows you how constructed this whole idea of marijuana abuse is.
Yeah, it reminds me of the normal poster that marijuana smokers arrested every 38 seconds, and you wonder why we're paranoid.
Exactly. So here is, in a sense, where the policy itself is contributing to the generation of something that is then turned into a symptom of a disorder. You know, it sounds like the old Soviet bloc things where anybody who was a political dissident got labeled as insane. It's really a strange way to make these things move around.
Well, and it fits in so nicely with the policy of arresting people for marijuana and sentencing them to treatment, and then using the numbers of increased rates of treatment to justify arresting people for marijuana.
Exactly, exactly. I didn't want to lose track of one of the focuses in this Bruce Johnson paper is the blunt chasing habit, and that's mm-hmm. something that may not be familiar to some of our older listeners, but basically in the blunt community, often you smoke a blunt and then there's a bunch of cigars lying around, and so then the idea of a cigar seems like a good idea. And that was a lot of this sample's comorbid use of tobacco and marijuana under those circumstances. I really have to emphasize that, smoked tobacco is a tough thing. It really does have a lot of negative health consequences, markedly worse than those of cannabis. And if folks are cigarette smokers or even cigar smokers, they can really benefit, decrease their, chances of lip, mouth, and lung cancer if they're willing to quit. And there are a number of websites that can help them along. They're always welcome to email me, and I really do feel like the decrease in tobacco use in this country has really helped our health in the long run.
Do they look at these? We've been talking about cannabis with alcohol, cannabis with tobacco. What about the other drugs that are out there, licit and illicit? Do they ever take those into account when we're talking about cannabis dependence or the dependent symptoms for those drugs?
Well, I noticed you did talk with my student Nicholas Van Damme about some of that schizotypy data, and so the dependent stuff may not be the only outcome that's affected by this. It looks like methamphetamine, cocaine, and a lot of those dopaminergic stimulants may be contributing to some of these psychotic effects. So this big jumping up and down about marijuana causing schizophrenia may be a product of actual use of stimulant drugs. And I noticed that in all those studies, their measures of do you use stimulant drugs are never as precise or as detailed as their measures of cannabis use, which is kind of telling. And then with dependence itself, in part, it's just impossible to ask somebody to, sort of sort through their subjective experience and say, which is the drug you're craving right now, or what is this withdrawal from, unless all the other drugs are available. And, of course, in treatment settings, that's certainly not the case.
I see. Now, earlier on in our discussion, you had mentioned some work by one of your students named Sarah, was it Smoker Barnwell?
Yeah, Sarah Smoker Barnwell.
Do all of you drug and alcohol researchers have puntastic names?
It's kind of stunning how this happens. And in fact, there's a researcher who's discovered that, people named Johnson tend to live on Johnson Street.
Uh-huh.
And, Fred Blow does cocaine research, and Mitch Earlywine. I have done a lot of alcohol work. It's just one of these things where, as its name is, so it is. So
I guess so.
The guy who took out my tonsils, Dr. Butcher, clearly was part of that process.
Now that's a little bit inappropriate, if you ask me, Dr. Butcher. Well, Dr. Earlywine, it's always fun talking to you on these Wednesdays for Cannabis Science. We always learn something new, and you had mentioned that people could email you if they had more questions. What is that email address?
So my best one to reach me for this kind of thing is 420 research, the number 4, the number 2, the number 0, research@gmail.com.
Okay.
420research@gmail.com.
And we also want to let people know that you've got lots of books out that people can get a hold of. Most recent one, Parents' Guide to Marijuana. Any website or the other information? You have any new books coming out soon?
Oh, I'm working on this treatment book, and I'm about 100 pages into it, and as soon as I'm done, I'll let everybody know. The Parents' Guide is available at Amazon, and right now it's $1 off, I think, but the High Times website also has that. And then Understanding Marijuana is out in paperback now, and it's, you know, relatively cheap and a fun summer read, and it's still fairly up to date, and I think people would get a kick out of it. I just got the Spanish version in the mail today, Entender la Marijuana. So if you want to read it in Spanish, by all means, that's available too.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Lewine, thanks for joining us again on the Daily Audio Stash.
Good to hear.